the Rule of Threes Podcast. The Rule of Threes Podcast. It's the Rule of Threes Podcast with Chris and Casey.
It's the Rule of Threes Podcast. I'm Chris Grace.
I'm Casey Lawrence.
It is Thursday, October 1st, 2020, and we're already one game into the NBA Finals. We got off to a good start.
the Lakers got off to a fantastic start. If you are a Miami Heat fan, you got off to a less fantastic start.
Possibly the worst possible way you could start the series.
Yeah, to lose a game handily. And then lose 2 to 3 of your best players.
Not good. I will note that. The reason we did a little mini episode yesterday after game one, our plan is to do a little mini episode after all the games, after all 5 of these games. I was not able to watch it real time yesterday because of some prior engagements. I ended up watching a replay of it. And I think if you haven't watched this game, I think that it's important to know that the injuries, by the time the injuries happened in the game was over. There was a huge momentum shift in this game, but it was not because Bam, Jimmy Butler, or Goran Dragic got injured.
No, in fact, Jimmy played the normal amount that he would have in this game because his injury was fixed at halftime. They cut off his ankle and gave him a new ankle to head back into the second half with.
Right.
And Goran Dragic just didn't play the second half because of his plantar fascia tear. And Bam was out there in the third quarter and got injured, and the game was already out of hand at that point.
Yeah, you can have sort of like skewed takeaways if you just read like what people write about a game. Much like you might, if you just read about the debate this week, you would think that the two guys were just yelling and interrupting each other at the same amount in this week's debate. And that is not the case.
I tell you what, I got in an argument with some friends of mine about what I could gain from this debate. Cause I was just like, no amount of money you could pay me to watch this debate. Mm-hmm. There's like no amount of like anything you could offer me. Just the amount of stress and the anger that I have over this specific debate. I'm so glad I skipped it. I'm so, so glad I skipped it.
There's really nothing of any rational consideration that you would have learned from watching this debate. I actually ended up watching it because I found it. The only thing that I think was a positive was that it was actually kind of felt good to see Joe Biden like tell him to shut up. He called him a fool. He said he was a clown. He said he was racist. And it was like, oh, it's actually nice that someone is just saying these things directly to him.
Yeah.
On a national stage. I don't care about the decorum. The decorum was already like lost once Trump's. I mean, the way Trump was speaking in the debate was so unpresidential that the decorum didn't really matter. So it was funny. There was a catharsis to seeing like, you know, the second one of the two potential leaders for the country next year, just calling someone on their bullshit the way we would want to, like on Twitter or something like that. So there was something kind of refreshing about that. And that's literally probably the only good takeaway from the whole debate.
That's excellent. I think I have tweeted before, like, why doesn't anybody just ever call him a motherfucker? Like,
yeah, that's basically what he did. You know, he just said like, well, you shut up, man. It's funny. It's just like, I don't know. It struck me in a very, I have reservations about Biden, but like the thing that I do like about him in public life and the debate sometimes is that during the Democratic debates, I think I mentioned this, but one of the things I loved about him in those debates was he'd be talking and they'd be saying, that's your time, sir. And he'd be like, all right, I guess I'm going to stop. No one else stops. Why do I stop? It was just like such a like uncle-y way to talk about this stuff. And this fair felt like that too.
I will say this. I really want to watch that vice presidential debate.
Oh yeah.
That's what the action is.
As the kids say, that's going to be lit. Or as the kids in Valorant say, let's fucking go.
Let's fucking go. Let's fucking go is such a good phrase. Let's fucking go.
Kamala versus Pence. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
That's the other one. I like that. That's the other one that I've picked up from Valorant.
Hey, man, you just keep playing Valorant, you're going to have all those cool kid phrases.
I mean, no cap, Kamala's going to beat him. I don't know. No cap, I've learned.
Yeah.
Bet. I don't understand what these mean, but... I mean, honestly, they're also basically when you play Valorant, you're playing with a bunch of very few of the people that have played with, just based on their voices, have been African-American. But there's a lot of African-American co-opted speech in the Generation Z vernacular.
I mean, to be totally honest with you, it was in millennials. Yes, it was in the boomers. Generous. Everybody has co-opted black culture for as long as black culture has been a thing.
Not rad. Rad and awesome.
Rad and awesome. Tubular.
The rad for me was a kid thing. Like when I was a kid, we said rad. And then when I came up to Los Angeles, I was like, oh, adults say rad out here?
Oh, rad. Absolutely.
And I was like, But I've said awesome my whole life with no, like... Like, it doesn't even sound like a thing to me. It just sounds like something you say. And I think that strikes people as a very 80s kid thing to say. That's fun. But you know what? Facts. Bet. It's lit.
Oh, boy. And I'll tell you what facts I've bet on to be lit. It's the odds that the Miami Heat will win the championship. Those facts are on fire.
Yo,
because
dead ass, I think you're wrong.
Oh. You live ass think I'm wrong.
No cap. Dead okay. ass, you're wrong.
All right. Well, we've just shown how fun and cool we are.
I don't like the no cap thing. Okay, no cap is just saying like no lie. Stop the cap is like stop lying. I'm just translating from our older listeners. Dead ass just means like for real.
Yeah, dead ass does mean for real.
I'm not kidding, basically. And there was one other one that was just like, oh, we had a fine word for that before. Oh, no, the main flip that I really don't like is when you say like, I fuck with the Lakers defense.
Oh, I definitely fuck with the Lakers defense.
I do not like that switch in meaning because, you know, I bet Jimmy Butler as a prankster, isn't he one of the pranksters in the league?
Yeah, I mean, I would say this whole coffee thing is kind of a prank.
That he fucks with people in that way. In similar to Loki, the god of chaos.
See, here's the thing. Fuck is such a versatile word.
Yeah.
Right? You know, to fuck around, you know, obviously that's to mess around. Mm-hmm. But to fuck with, that also means to mess with. But to fuck with, it also means to, like, really appreciate.
Well, you fuck with the Lakers defense.
Oh, I definitely fuck with the Lakers
defense. But the Miami Heat failed to fuck with the Lakers defense.
Yes, they didn't fuck with it at all. Except for the first 5 minutes. No, yeah. I mean, and it wasn't, you know, and I kind of talked about this yesterday a little bit. It felt from that first 5 minutes that we were going to get one of those bad Dwight Howard games.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really impressive to see the Lakers turn that around and execute for the rest of that first quarter and basically until the end of the third quarter in a way that they just could not be stopped. They're too big. They're too strong. And Miami went cold. And that combo led to like a crazy disparity. Whereas I think normally the Lakers would be, you know, about like 8 to 10 points a game better.
Do you read Lakers film room?
Every once in a while.
He had some good points about just how large the Lakers are. And it's funny because I think I mentioned this during the Rockets series that when theoretically the Lakers were playing small ball.
Oh, yeah.
That they were not that small.
No, the Lakers small ball is a center who's 6'10", 250. A point guard who's 6'9", 250.
Yeah.
A power forward who's 6'10", 220. And then two guards that are 6'5 or taller.
Right. Like Danny Green is not a small shooting guard.
No. KCP 6'5. Alex Caruso 6'5. Yeah. Rajon Rondo is 6'1, I believe. And that's the shortest guy on the team.
Oh, I wanted to ask you this. I actually missed whether you had mentioned this in the podcast in the mini episode, but you texted me. What did you text me?
Best Kuzma play since the Houston
series. And I wanted to know which play were you referring to?
It was one where he passed the ball to Anthony Davis under the hoop. He drove to the basket and it looked like he had no idea what was going on. Yes. And then he dropped it off to AD for the dunk.
Yes. I believe right after that, Mark Jackson was like, yeah, he has added the passing element to his game. And I was like, I don't think so.
I mean, he made a couple of passes. If we need a mea culpa on this one, you know, I was on the podcast talking about how Kyle Kuzma has arrived. He can be that guy. Kyle Kuzma arrived, showed up to the party, and was like, peace, I'm out, for basically the end of the Houston series until, now. And he still has not come back. We're not saying Kuzma's back. We're just saying, you know, Kuzma didn't hurt us in game one.
Yeah.
How's that sound?
Sure. By the way, last year, Kuzma averaged 2.5 assists per game. This year, he averaged 1.3.
Yeah, the 2.5 and 1.3 are exactly the same.
If anything, it's better. It's clear that he's added passing to his game.
Yeah.
And by the way, his per 36 minutes assist ratio has also dropped.
Mark Jackson, not good.
Just in general.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mark Jackson, a good basketball player.
He was a perfectly fine basketball player. You know, he was a journeyman. You know, he played on a bunch of teams.
I would say he's better than a journeyman.
Oh, no. We looked this up, and I remember looking up and being like, oh, this dude sucked bad.
He was not an all-star?
Not often.
I bet he was. I'm going to say he was a three-time all-star.
Oh, no. No way. Absolutely not.
Looks like he was a one-time all-star. Yeah. That's what that little star means on basketball.
Yes, perfect. It does.
Oh, yeah. You know what? He's not as good as I thought he was.
No, he is not.
I guess that he was on a few playoff runs, maybe.
He was on some Indiana playoff runs, some Knicks playoff runs.
So maybe he's more prominent.
He rarely missed the playoffs. 22.
There you go. Well, he did make the All-Star team once,
but he was a journeyman who just was a good assist man.
So I meant to say that he's a good player because I don't think he's good at anything else.
Yeah, I mean, because here's the thing: the highest he ever averaged in points in a game was or in a season was 16.9.
Yeah,
right, and everything else was under that. That's
his second season.
Yeah, he's not that good.
But that's a second season where you're like, man, this guy's about to break out.
And he broke something, and it was his ability to play good basketball the next two seasons for the Knicks.
Actually, this is not a bad link to us talking about the Denver Nuggets a little bit, if you want to just very briefly talk about the end of the Denver Nuggets. Because I say this, I have said this very often about Kyle Kuzma, that the idea that he is just going to continuously get better is just not a given. Mm-hmm. And I would say that that's also true of Michael Porter Jr.
Oh.
And also true of Jeremy Grant.
Okay.
I think they're both the very have like flashes of brilliance. And Jeremy Grant, certainly, I think I texted you, this is a trap for the Nuggets because they have to pay Jeremy Grant now.
Yeah.
Right before he has to deal with, is he a free agent this year? Or is he like
he
1 year?
He has a player option, which is likely to decline.
He's going
to
decline because I think they said he's the options for like $9 million.
Yeah.
And I believe they think his value is between 12 and 14.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to pay him, and he has made the best case possible for that.
Yeah.
But, you know, during that series, I was like, he's kind of the Pascal Siakam of their team. And that's another case of someone who I think it's safe to say had a disappointing postseason this year.
He did have a disappointing postseason. I am wary about using the bubbles games as a predictive people who played poorly. For people who played well, I'm not opposed to using it as a predictive quality for them. And here's the reason why. I think that when things are going poorly or you're like not feeling good or like there's, you know, bullshit going on in the world, it can affect you mentally in a way that I feel like a lot of teams got affected, a lot of players got affected in the bubble this year. And I think that doesn't mean that they can't bounce back in the future. But I feel like the people who push their game to the next level, the people who play better, you know, the Jokic, the Murray, people like, I feel like Michael Porter Jr. is one of those guys who I think is going to build on what he's done this year. Mm-hmm. I think that Devin Booker and the Phoenix Suns are going to build on it next year. I think that you can take the good things away from the bubble. I think it's tough to say like, oh, these bad things show that this is a person in decline.
So I would say you would also apply that to Kawhi and Paul George as well.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe not Kawhi, because Kawhi played really well in the bubble. You know, he had a bad game seven. That's basically it.
Yeah. I think it might not be a good idea to make any predictive things, good or bad, based on the bubble, only because, God willing, or as Joe Biden would say in the debate, inshallah, Muslim phrase that he used in the debate,
okay,
which means God willing, this won't ever happen again. So even if a player was like, he's great in the bubble or he's terrible in bubble conditions, you know, we can presume, hopefully, that this won't be the way the playoffs are run next year. So even if there was a bunch of bubble-related stress that caused a player to underperform, there's a good chance that's not going to happen again.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I would caution people about thinking that, like, okay, Michael Porter Jr. showed these flashes of brilliance, and he's definitely going to take the next step up. Because this second season of Mark Jackson's is an example. Michael Carter Williams is another example. Where you think that things just go up and up every single season. Anyway, I'll just be interested to see what Jeremy Grant's production is like next year on a larger contract. The thing that I would maybe argue for signing him is that he is the son of a professional basketball player. So that I would almost think that maybe the variance is less. Like, there's just a better chance of him being a solid pro.
Yeah.
Because he grew up in the context of... Actually, is he? I don't know if he's Horace or Harvey Grant's.
He's one of their sons.
Yeah.
Also, he has a brother. He's the other one's nephew.
Right, and he has a brother that also plays.
Yes, or he has a cousin that plays.
I think he has a brother.
Yeah, could be.
I think it also starts with a J.
Jerrion. I can't
Jeremy
remember.
Jeremy and Jerrion.
That
doesn't clue me into whether they are Harvey or Horace's son.
No, it certainly does not.
Although maybe it means every generation will move to the next consonant. So when they have children, they should start with the letter K.
Ooh.
So the Nuggets series. Actually, speaking of the bubble and the Nuggets series, I wasn't that surprised that they closed it out so quickly, because I think before the whole bubble started, I did mention that I thought that LeBron might have an advantage in the bubble in terms of assembling a team for him to always be ready for games. I think that his ability to assemble a team of physical therapists and, you know, skills coaches and nutritionists and all that, I wouldn't be surprised if he has a higher level of organizing that kind of expertise around him than your average player.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the bubble, even if they're not there, even if they're just like, here, I'm sending you your meal plan for this week for you to peak perfectly at 6 p.m. to play in that playoff game. He has shown that he's had taken a lot of care in the way that he recovers from games. And it's also possible that the bubble helped the veteran players in that they were able to get to recovery faster without any travel. I mean, I assume when the game's over, they just walk to their hotel, right?
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's not – I mean, you know, actually, I'm not sure, because there is a bus, and not all three of the places are right next to each other. You know, I'm not entirely sure about that. I think there is a bus.
So at most, they're taking like a 15-minute shuttle bus back to their hotel room as opposed to getting on a plane somewhere, and also as opposed to going out to a club after a win in the middle of a playoff series in the town that you're on the road in. This felt very much, if the context of the bubble is kind of a, like, we're sort of here to do business and create content for basketball watchers to watch.
Yeah.
Anything that's more like this is about business, I think it's advantage LeBron compared to.
I think that's fair. That's definitely fair because he's got the drive to do it. He's got the money to do it. He's got the desire to do it.
Now, I think I mentioned this last week. I think the Nuggets will be a scary team for the next 5 years. Potentially, like I really like Jokic. I'll be interested to see if Murray can build on what he did this year. I was very happy to see that he still choked away some possessions at the end of game five. Because it is still my contention that he is not that great of a point guard. He's a great scorer, but I have seen him many, many times fail under ball pressure.
Okay.
And I think that certainly he can work on it, but even in the fourth quarters of some of that series, there were significant possessions where he like threw the ball away. And I think that his handle is not as good as like Lillard's, Kyrie's, Steph's.
What do you think about
just my theory?
This comparison for him, Allen Iverson, minus 50% of his handles plus 50% of his shooting.
I would say Allen Iverson minus the handles plus I want to say some height. And yeah, some strength. Yes,
definitely some height. Height and strength, I think, are there. Because Iverson was 5'11", 6 feet, and Jamal Murray 6'4", 6'3", yeah. 6'4", something like that. But, yeah, for me, like I feel like the way that he's crafty around the rim and in the lane reminds me of Allen Iverson, you know, with, like, the caveat that Allen Iverson is a much better ball handler, yeah. A much worse shooter.
Is he a much worse shooter?
I think so. I mean, from Allen Iverson's time, he was never like a fantastic shooter from 3-point land. And he was not like, his mid-range game was good.
Look at what Allen Iverson's shooting percentages were like. Okay. So he's when you look at sort of his heyday. So he looks like Allen Iverson sort of in his heyday was, let's say his Philly years before he went to Denver.
Okay.
Essentially was like in the 42% shooting range and 31% from three. Mm-hmm. And Jamal Murray is in the 44% and 36 from three. So it is better, but I don't know if I would say that's significantly better.
But it's also, 2-pointers. And then there's layups. Like, let's go into the shooting by distance, right?
Uh-huh.
For his career.
You think maybe Iverson is stronger at the rim and worse from 5 feet and beyond?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So 57% at the rim and 35%, 37% from 3 to 10, 10 to 16, 40% from the mid-range, and 30% from 3-point. And if we go to our guy, Jamal Murray, your fave, he's your guy.
Yes, he is not.
He's a full, 3% better. He's 43% from 16 to 3, but he's significantly better at the, in the lane, in the range of, that area. And, admittedly, he shot a lot less from there, but still.
Yeah, it's interesting.
He's obviously no Allen Iverson from a full career value perspective, right? Like AI gone nuts. He went nuts for forever.
Well, it's also just interesting how it would have been interesting to see Iverson in a 3-point shooting era. Iverson, and not saying, he didn't show himself to be a great 3-point shooter, but we've also seen a lot of people that were like, we didn't think were good 3-point shooters because sort of in the transition into this era, they were shooting like 31-32%. Mm-hmm. And we have seen some people sort of be like, oh, when I get to shoot 5 a game, I can shoot 34-35%. When I know that I'm game planning for this thing. Anyway, from the looks of it, Allen Iverson, 80% of his shots were 2-pointers. So it would have been interesting to see, especially as someone that was so much about dribble penetration, what challenges he would have posed to the defense when the three-pointer was like a constant threat the way that it is in the league now.
Yeah.
I want to say that Patrick Beverley was like, well, no, he's kind of always shot well from three. Yeah, I don't know. He just manages to airball just when I'm watching. So anyway, like I think that Denver's going to be really a fun team to watch. I actually was a little sad. Like Gary Harris really isn't what he was. That was because I think at one point he was kind of supposed to be the third guy.
Yeah, he was.
Will Barton is sort of supposed to be the third guy. Now Michael Porter Jr. might be the third guy.
Yeah.
And they might all turn into third guy, but Gary Harris was supposed to be that guy. In fact, I was reading Denver commentary that they're mainly now want him in there for his defense and not for his offense. And at one time, he was a very offensive-minded player.
Yeah.
Another thing that from the Nuggets series that I thought was disappointing was that I thought that Kyle Kuzma really paled in comparison to Michael Porter Jr.
Are you familiar with the Spider-Man meme?
Yeah, you mean the twins?
The two Spider-Men pointing at each other.
Yeah,
like I really feel like Kyle Kuzma thinks that he's in the Spider-Man meme with Michael Porter Jr.
Right.
Whereas in fact he's actually just like a very small, tiny, bad Spider-Man versus regular, normal Spider-Man. With Michael Porter Jr. And I wish there was some way to convey that in a meme, but I didn't have the skills to do that.
I think that, you know, honestly, for the amount of money that the Lakers pay him, I think Kyle Kuzma is great. They're paying him like less than $2 million a year or something like that, or whatever it is, whatever his rookie deal is. I forgot where he was drafted, but he was not drafted as high as Michael Porter Jr. So it's not really a fair comparison. But this is Kyle Kuzma's third year, and
Kyle Kuzma played 3 years in college, so Kyle Kuzma is like 5 years older than Michael Porter Jr. If you want to like look them up, MPJ was born in 99.
Michael Porter Kuzma Jr. Kyle Kuzma is 24 years old. It's not that I want to directly compare them, but they actually kind of did interact a lot during that series.
They absolutely did. And Kyle Kuzma took it personally. And it was like, well, I mean, if you're going to take it personally, don't take it personally when you suck real bad.
And it wasn't that Kyle Kuzma was doesn't really bother me that he was not productive and not super, you know, he didn't fill up the stat sheet. It's that he seemed younger than Michael Porter Jr. He seemed less there for the moment. He seemed less assertive. He seemed more lost on movement in the offense. And so he just felt like the little kid brother that got to play in the pickup game because his big brother is running it.
Yeah. I mean, he has not been an efficient player and he's not contributed on defense. He is not good.
I think it was the game they lost where like he had some, or no, they actually, it was the game maybe three where they won, where he had some really undisciplined closeouts.
Okay.
That as a third year player under Frank Vogel, who's a defensive coach, I mean, I can't do them. I'm not an athletic six, whatever person that Kyle Kuzma is, but I have seen plenty of NBA players do solid closeouts on 3-point shots where they don't foul or where they don't leave their feet because of a fake. I've seen very, very, I know what a solid closeout looks like.
Yeah.
And he was not doing it.
Sorry, buddy. I am currently on the Kyle Kuzma meter out on Kyle Kuzma.
Yeah. But like I said, I think it's a part, I think some of it is undue expectations that the fan base has put on him.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Because, as I mentioned, he is getting paid $1.9 million this year. Next year, he's going to make $3.5 million. And then the next year is the qualifying offer for $5 million. So that's a great deal. Like, but I don't think that's a great deal for your up-and-coming kid that's like going to get 10 minutes a game or so. You know what I mean? Like, it's not proportional to what we are expecting him to do, which is like, we really wanted you to be the guy that would come in and consistently score 15 points a game.
Yeah. You know, it's very funny. I have not often gone on the similarity scores on Basketball Reference, but there are just some wild people on these similarity scores.
Hear them.
The number two guy on Devin Booker's similarity score for his career so far is very funny. He is a guy whose name is Ray Lump with two P's at the end of his name. Ray Lump.
Isn't that like a Taiwanese shrimp dumpling or something?
No, it's not. In fact, it is Ray Lump who has the second highest performance arc through five seasons, but the most similar career performance arc in total to Devin Booker. And Ray Lump, in case you didn't know who Ray Lump was, he was a point guard and shooting guard, 6'1", 178 pounds, born July 11th, 1923.
Oh.
And he played for the New York Knickerbockers.
I'm amazed that they've even assembled like full on. Is that based on PER?
It's based on wind chairs.
Wind chairs. I'm amazed that they went and figured out wind chairs for like games in the 20s.
Yeah. Truly just very funny to see Ray Lump. And then there's one for Alex Caruso. I was on the Alex Caruso page just to see if I could make some fun stuff go with old Alex Caruso. And he's got one with a guy whose name is just like a little offensive.
Oh, what's that?
I'm going to let you go to the page and look up Francis Patrick Crossan Jr.
Let's see. I'm looking up Alex Caruso's profile.
Alex Caruso's profile. And I was like, whoa, how can he be?
By the way, Alex Caruso is also in his third season.
He is in
his third season. And he has a much more established stature than Kyle Kuzma does.
Yes. Oh, 100%.
Okay. Alex Caruso's similarity scores. I see Kevin O'Shea. Is that where you're looking? Oh. No.
Yeah.
Chink Crossan.
Yeah. I wasn't going to say it on the out loud.
That's what people say when I jaywalk.
Jesus Christ. No.
Well, that's not good because Chink Crossan's career is only three seasons long.
Three seasons long, and he very similar to John Salmons. Really, this is very funny. The old names, Corky Devlin, Dirk Minifield.
Dirk Minifield, yeah, I know. I know him. Yeah, he's a Rocket, yeah. I think.
Born in 1961, he was a Houston Rocket in 1986. Mm-hmm. Look at you.
I love Dirk Minifield.
Yeah, and then in his career, he played three seasons, and he played for Cleveland, got traded to Houston, signed with Golden State, traded to Boston.
Chink Crossan, his nickname derives from the sound that chain link nets made when his shot dropped through. By the way, if you look at Jamal Murray's, his similarity scores aren't great either yet. But it kind of hurt. It's not great for young players.
It's not great for young players. Also, it's just not great. This similarity scores thing. It's not good.
Jamal Murray's nearest similarity is Hubert Davis.
Oh, hey, yeah, there he is, Hubert freaking Davis. So the Iverson prediction a little premature on my end.
I don't know. So let me ask you this. In 5 years, who's going to be a better player, Jamal Murray or Donovan Mitchell?
Oh, shit. That's tough.
Before the bubble, I think you would have said Donovan Mitchell pretty easily.
You know, honestly, I don't know if I would have because Donovan Mitchell had been kind of not having a great season. He'd been having that, like, downward trend. I could be fucking wrong.
After game four of the Jazz Nuggets series, you probably would have said Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah. It's tough, right? I think I'd pick Donovan Mitchell. Yeah. Over Jamal Murray. Yeah.
Now, I think it's a question now.
Ooh. So you are going to take some of that bubble stuff.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I would prefer Jamal Murray be a shitty player the rest of his career.
Well, okay. Let's just say neither of them are Ray Lump.
Yeah, neither of them is Chink Crossan.
Oh, God.
I didn't catch much, to be honest. I didn't catch much of the Heat-Celtics series. I caught the last game. But, like, when Boston was making their little, hey, we're still in it series.
When they won game five.
Yeah, is that what happened?
Yeah, that's all that happened, is they won game five.
It seemed like, wait, they were down 3-1?
They were down 3-1, yeah.
Okay. I guess, yeah, I guess it's when they won the one. But, like, I don't know. It almost seemed like for a while that they were, the Heat won the first two, isn't that right?
I believe the Heat won the first two. Then the Celtics came back and won game three.
Yes.
Lost game four to Tyler Hero's heroics.
I think the last time we talked, it was almost like, oh, are the Heat just going to go up 3-0? And, like, like, I feel like the back half of that, it did seem like, oh, maybe Boston's finding its way. It seemed like a very disappointing season for Boston in a way that like this didn't feel like a series that they were they were probably the favorites going into the series. You know, it feels different from previous years.
Yeah. They're disappointed. They definitely expected more. I mean, they expected to be in the finals because they're a team that believes that they're good.
So again, this is the Chris Grace theory of the lack of incremental improvements every year. Was it 2 years ago that Kyrie was injured and this postseason was just like, this is a fun run. And they did great. Like Jalen and Jason Tatum had like great series, but they came up short.
Yeah.
But it was like, we don't expect anything. These guys are the future. It's awesome.
Yep. It was 2 years ago they lost to the Celtics. Sorry, they lost to the Cavs.
This was the first. Yes. Also, it was a 2 years ago LeBron team that they lost to.
Yeah.
So it's just like, whatever. You know, we're injured. We have these great young talent. We lost to, you know, this guy has been in the finals every single year. And then, I wouldn't necessarily say that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are leagues better, had a much better postseason than they did that postseason. In terms of what you would have expected them to be as like the number one and number two players of the team without Kyrie, or actually not more, but like with Kemba as well. When Jason Tatum first had his rookie year and was having a great year, I remember saying like he might be the kind of player that this is 90% of how good he's going to be, because a lot of his talents seem very skill based, as opposed to like he's physically dominant in some way where he's rough and you add these skills and he's going to be even better. Like I think Jason Tatum will probably be a better 15-year player, you know, than some of these other Bam Adebayo or something, you know. But I'm still interested to see if he's really going to like take that extra step. I feel like now we have a lot of players that seem to be like second tier stars, and it's not clear which of them is really going to take over when LeBron and Kawhi and all of them leave.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's definitely not going to be, you know, Jaylen Brown. I don't think Jaylen Brown's going to step up to that level. I think Jason Tatum has a shot. I think the Simmons and Bede pairing has a shot now that they have a new coach. I think that there's, you know, does Giannis count as the guy who takes the torch next, or is he too old for that now?
No, I think he counts as the guy who takes the torch next.
Does Zach LaVine count? That was a joke. Zach LaVine doesn't count for anything.
You know, I think honestly, right now, probably Anthony Davis counts.
Yeah.
For the next little time.
Yeah. I can see that.
I think Giannis does count in a way, but you know, now he really is now at a point where it's like you have to do something in the postseason.
Yeah. Is it going to be LaMelo Ball?
It could be LaMelo Ball. Is it Golden State Warriors?
Karl Anthony Towns?
Yeah, maybe. I feel less secure about that. Is it going to be Andrew Wiggins?
No, it's definitely not going to be Andrew Wiggins.
You briefly mentioned that
it's going to be RJ Barrett.
RJ Barrett? Is it going to be Amy Coney Barrett?
God. No.
You briefly mentioned the 76-70 coach. How do you feel about Doc Rivers being the Philly coach?
I mean, the long and short of it is that I think that they'll probably do better next year than they did this year.
Yeah.
And that's probably partially just because you're getting a new coach and partially because it couldn't have gone any worse for the Philadelphia 76ers this year.
Luckily, he doesn't have to change any of his red, white, and blue decor.
No, he's totally good. He could even wear some of those Clippers shirts inside out.
He can drive to Philly in his red, white, and blue Honda Odyssey.
He can bring Clipper Daryl with him. Just tell him
he really could. He really could. I think that I feel like Doc tends to have good first impressions with teams. Like,
yeah,
he tends to have a nice, fresh voice. He's a, you know, he's a player's coach. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they just enjoy playing for him more than they did for Brett Brown.
I will say the first time in the history of the world that anyone has ever said that Doc Rivers has a nice, fresh voice rather than like a scraggly monster voice.
Ubuntu.
Yeah. The poor guy is just the, you know, he doesn't quite have vocal fry, but he does have fried vocals.
Yeah. How many games do you think this Lakers Heat is going to go?
Five. That's my thought. It was my thought before the series. I have for the entirety of the Western Conference playoffs chickened out from picking the Lakers in five. I picked them in six every time.
And they've literally only been Lakers in five every single time.
And so I am now all in on the, wouldn't it be so funny if they just won every series 4-1?
Right. If they did like a modern version of Moses Malone and were just like 5-5-5-5. If listeners don't know, Moses Malone at one point, they asked him how the playoffs were going to go. And he was like 4-4-4. And I think they only lost one game or something. It was crazy. Like, he almost perfectly predicted that they were just going to like sweep their way through the finals.
Yeah. Moses Malone is awesome.
Especially with, if any of these injuries are like, honestly, if Dragic is not in the rest of the series, then
it's
five is like great for the Heat. You know? And by the way, the Heat are like, they're overachieving anyway. You know, we're in the bubble, so they're not full of these crowds. I actually do think that it is a shame that these aren't taking place in Staples Center. That does make me sad that there's not the chance to kind of like enjoy that. Not that we would have been going, but, you know, I don't know. There's something about it. Like, they earn the right to have these home games. And what it means is that like they project your logo on the side and they invite more virtual fans from your team than the other. Right. But, you know, for the Heat, it's not a bad way for like Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson to get some finals experience. In a way that I would be shocked. Who was that? Lakers applause?
Lakers applause.
I would be shocked if Tyler Hero and Trevor Nunn and Duncan Robinson came into this final series and just played the lights out.
Yeah. Kendrick Nunn.
Kendrick Nunn. Who's Trevor Nunn?
Trevor Nunn is
the producer of Les Mis.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
Yes, yes. I'm getting confused with Terrence Mann.
Terrence Mann. Kendrick Nunn, Terrence Nunn. What was the one? Taylor?
Terrence Mann. Oh, Terry Lynn
Nunn.
You're not thinking of Taylor Horton?
Taylen Horton Tucker. Taylen
Horton
Tucker.
Yeah.
Taylen.
By the way, as you mentioned Tucker. In your mini episode, JaVale does seem to have dropped off the depth chart.
Yeah.
And I do hope he gets in for a little bit, but it seems like right now I am genuinely happy for Dwight Howard. I actually, this is such a, the whole last 18 months has been so strange because now I find myself liking Rondo. Mm-hmm. I find myself liking Dwight Howard.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I even thought to myself, if the Lakers win, am I going to buy a LeBron jersey?
Whoa.
The answer is probably not, but.
Okay. All right.
But the reason is probably not is, that actually really want those light blue Kobe jerseys.
So you're going to wait for those. Yeah.
Well, they're available right now, but they're $300.
Oh, well, like, yeah, you're going to wait for the Swingman version.
Yeah. Is that the one that's just a replica jersey?
Well, it's the middle one because they have the replica ones that are absolute garbage.
Well, I also wouldn't mind just having a t-shirt. Because to be honest, I don't have a lot of opportunities to wear basketball jerseys in my life.
That's fair. That's fair.
Although I feel like Casey Lawrence finds opportunities for that.
I have found many an opportunity to wear a basketball jersey. Oftentimes, here's the accessory piece you need. Just a cool bomber jacket.
Hey, that's not bad.
Right? Like, no, I'm not even kidding. Like, if you have a bomber jacket, you can wear a basketball jersey to places that you normally would not be able to.
That actually makes sense.
You know, you lose the ability to say, hey, I've got this name on the back of my jersey. But maybe you get a bomber jacket that's just shoulders and only goes up to here on your backside. They make those. You can buy it on Wish.
You can buy anything on Wish.
Sure.
Those light blue Lakers jerseys are dead ass. They're lit.
Okay. Yeah, I actually don't really like those light blue ones.
Oh, man, I really like them.
It's something about the script, something about the blue and the blue together. You know, I'm not feeling it.
What's this about the Lakers wearing retro jerseys next year?
Oh, like that's what they're going to do. They're going to have that jersey as one of their rotational jerseys.
Okay. And when it's a rotational jersey, how often do you end up seeing that then?
Probably 10 to 13 times a year.
Oh, okay. Wow. I don't know if I want the series to be competitive or if I just want the Lakers to just win it.
I want the Miami Heat to win one game because that's very important.
I'm just going to guess, since we're both Lakers fans, that you don't really care about the perception of the degree of difficulty of winning this championship.
No, I don't give one half of one shit about that.
I didn't think so.
No, why would I? Fuck that.
You know, it's funny because I think that the most relevant thing you could say is that if the Heat end up having three injured players, that whatever, right? But, you know, like LeBron also didn't have Kyrie and Kevin Love in a series that, you know, he's trying to contend against the Warriors with. You know, the Raptors faced a pretty weakened Warriors team last year. It's a part of almost every postseason.
Yeah.
These major injuries. Was it the late? Let's see. The Lakers beat the Celtics without Rasheed Wallace. Oh, no, not
Kendrick Perkins.
And Rasheed Wallace was in. And then, but who was the equivalent? Was it Bynum that was out when the Celtics beat the Lakers?
I don't remember.
There's significant, you know, it just happens all the time. And also, the main thing that people thought was going to be LeBron's main difficulty in winning this championship was the Clippers.
And I'm sorry, who?
The San Diego Clippers. And by that, I mean that, like, they were actually going to, like, move tall ships into the Orlando Disney bubble and block shots with the masts of these Clippers.
I mean, I'm in because that's more defense than they played against the Nuggets in the second round. Oh,
but you know, the thing is, like, what can you, that's not LeBron. That is not LeBron's fault.
No, that is actually LeBron's fault because he didn't do enough to get the Nuggets out of the Clippers bracket so that the Clippers would have an easier path to face the Lakers in the third round.
You know, the actual thing you could say that it's LeBron's fault is that teams over manipulated their rosters in anticipation of facing LeBron and didn't.
And it's easier to face Kawhi than to face LeBron.
You mean like that? I just mean that, like, they kind of designed their thing to be like, we have Kawhi and we have Paul George to guard LeBron when we play LeBron.
They didn't know that they were going to face a 7-foot Serbian marshmallow man and Jamal Murray just raining down on our amazing, fantastic 3-point buckets.
Yeah. We'll miss all these teams. It also struck me, for some reason, never struck me, but when the game ends and the series is over, like when Jokic and Murray are saying their goodbyes to the Lakers, saying like good game, good series, all that stuff, it didn't strike me until that moment that I was like, oh, they're packing up tomorrow and they're flying home.
Home.
Like, they're not around anymore. So now there's literally just the crews of the Lakers and the Heat and then all of the NBA personnel and media and all that stuff. Like, this bubble is just two teams now.
Yeah.
That I think is, I don't know, it feels very like kind of school end of school year poignant to me in some way. Yeah. Or like this, like other people are graduating and you never see them again. I don't know. It just feels melancholy to me in a way.
Closing time. Time for you to go out to the places you will be from.
Wait, is that the lyric?
I think so.
I know who I want to take me home. But why doesn't he just ask that person for a ride home?
you know, straight people and their anxieties. It's a nightmare.
Straight people. Casey, do you have any shows this week?
Trying to think. Do I have any shows this week? No, but I have a YouTube series to recommend.
Ooh.
I want to talk about the nation's top doctor, Dr. Tung.
Dr. Tung, T-U-N-G, Trump's top scientist. It's a video there I made last night. Everyone go watch it.
It's funny. It's good. I enjoyed it. I had a good time watching it.
Oh, good.
I loved the funny editing. You just did a good job of that.
You know, there's a new style of YouTube editing, which is like lots of jump cuts.
Yeah.
Which I'm learning because some feedback I got from my friends were like, "Oh, you don't quite have the style down yet." Because there's a thing about it it's interesting. My head doesn't move around enough for the jump cuts to be effective.
It's because you're too good at actually performing, and like I'm not even kidding, right? Like the people cut like this because they can't perform for longer than 10 right. seconds at a time. And so you didn't have that style quite there
because I'm like too consistent.
Yeah, I'm not even kidding.
I was doing jump cuts and my head would be in the exact same spot that it was. And I'd be like, oh, it looks like it's just like a stutter. It doesn't have that effect. Right. No. And then, but I will say the editing, most of the titles and pictures in that, the funny things that happen in the titles are things where I was like, I'm trying to do a keyframe and have this scroll off the screen and it's not working. Going to leave it like that. And actually that seemed very funny to me.
Yeah, it is. It is funny. And the, just like the random, like one frame of, somebody showing up down here. I forget who it was.
It was Judy Dench.
I don't know why. So she like showed up one frame down there. It was perfect.
So anyway, I just, this was my response to the debates. And I've had a lot of angry conversations with people. I was like, oh, is there like a fun, positive way for me to like talk about this stuff? And then the funny thing today, I send it to, I read a thing recently about creative projects where it's like, if you have a creative project, send it to 10 people and see how many of the 10 people will be willing to forward it on to someone else. So I just sent an email to mostly like friends in college, but also like a former producer that produced a play that I was in. Mm-hmm. I said, can you take a look at this? Just let me know if it's something you'd forward. You don't have to forward it. I'm just saying like, what do you think about it? And I was like, you know what? If you hate it, like just be kind, but like I'm open to feedback. And one guy who was like 60 years old was like, you know what? I hate to be harsh, but I hated this. It's not for me. I don't know. Maybe I'm too old, but I don't find anything funny about the debates. And I don't think that this is like material that you should be doing. And I was like, okay, fair enough. But it was funny. It's just like, it really rubbed him the wrong way.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, that man feels the exact same way about the debates that I do. But the stuff around the debates, that's the only stuff I can consume right now. Like, I can only, like, I watch A Closer Look, and I watch Last Week Tonight, and I watch what's the Cody Johnson news show?
Some more
news. Yeah.
I will say, if people go watch Dr. Tung, Trump's top scientist, number one on YouTube, there is a moment in there that is directly cribbed from the Casey Lawrence School of Comedy. Do you know which moment that is?
God,
there's a thing I say that is exactly in the tone of voice that Casey Lawrence would do it in a show.
Damn. What is it?
It's when I say, like, Judy Dench sometimes spontaneously combusts every 4 minutes. And then I go, Mrs. Henderson presents.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And it felt
very Casey Lawrence to me.
It's funny because I haven't performed comedy in 6 months. So I've forgotten what my performing style is.
Yeah. You know, also, I think this goes for everybody, especially if you're listening and you're performing. Like, I was like, I need to do something.
Yeah.
And I was actually, just the last little aside before we end, I have a lot of magician friends. My magician friends are they hustle so much more than comedy people because their lives depend on it. And half of them are like married with like three kids and they have a house and they have a mortgage, right? But they are miles ahead of comedy in terms of Zoom shows, the technology they are using. I watched a lecture on the weekend about this one performer who's doing Zoom shows, and they have, like, just in their LA apartment, a whole little mini studio with a switcher, and their show looks great. And I was like, oh, maybe we shouldn't just be like, I'm just going to be in a holding pattern until there's a vaccine. Maybe, like, what if we tried having a stand-up show? Like, I was like, you know, one thing that I'm not great at in stand-up that I could work on is crowd work. Well, I could very easily do crowd work in a Zoom comedy show.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, here's the thing. It is happening. There are people who are doing shows, but no one is watching.
Yeah.
And it is not fun to do. And it's, you know, yeah. like that's the thing with live comedy. I think one of the differences to me about like the magicians and the comedy, thing is that like, it feels to me like a lot of the magicians do that for work.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. And a lot of the comedians I know from LA do it for fun.
I think you hit the nail on the head because the magicians don't have the luxury of caring whether or not it's fun. They're like, this is my income. And actually, I will say that they are having decent crowds for some of their stuff.
That's great. I want that for them. That makes
I watched a virtual magic show on Sunday that had 150 people watching it.
That's awesome. That's so fucking cool. Yeah. Hell yeah. But yeah, that's a lot to say that I do not have a show this week.
And neither do I. Hey. So, you know, this is all just an exercise in hypocrisy. but we are going to do a mini episode after every game. So whichever one or two of us that got to see it live, we're going to just hop on the mic and give you an instant reaction.
Yep.
So we'll be having another one of those tomorrow. Is it every other day for the whole series?
No.
Or is there some hiccups in there?
Sunday to Wednesday. So game 4 to game 5, there's a 2-day break.
Gotcha. But tomorrow's game is on Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another game on Sunday. And then there's a little break. There's a little break as they prepare all of the confetti. The purple and yellow confetti.
So excited. You mean Forum Blue and Gold. Okay, don't get it twisted.
I'm sorry. Forum Blue and Gold, that's right. And I can't wait to see who's... This next game is technically a Lakers home game.
Yeah.
So can't wait to see who's in that Microsoft Teams meeting for this next game.
you know, President Obama talked about who those random people in the chat were with him.
Uh-huh.
They were people who volunteered for the first time to be a poll worker.
That's great.
Yeah. It was good news.
I mentioned on Twitter that when you were in the Microsoft Teams room, you got to talk to everybody sort of in your section.
We were all talking to each other the whole game.
So, and there's footage of Obama talking for a while during that game. So
yeah, here's the thing. There's no way that he like saw, like from the way that he had it set up, he didn't see who was next to him. He was just talking into a camera. And so he was hearing people and talking into a camera. And that's how he was doing it. Probably watching the game on something else.
That would be an incredible experience to be in just a chat with Obama and Shaq and all those people.
Yeah. I cannot wait to tell Shaq to shut the hell up so I can listen to Obama more.
Exactly. Well, I think we did it. Tune in tomorrow for a mini episode on game 2, which we're, you know, I would not be surprised if it's a Miami bounce back win.
I would be. I think this is going to be a game that the Lakers are going to win handily because Dragic and Adebayo are both likely to not play.
I'm gonna predict that Pat Riley summons up some grit.
Oh,
and that I'm gonna say that, but Butler has a above average game for him, which for me,
like in game 1, which he had an above average game.
Did he really?
Yeah,
I thought he had just an average game.
No, 23 points,
I want to say Butler's going to push 30 points. Well,
okay.
And I'm going to say Bam's going to have an average, which would be a good game. I'm going to guess that Duncan Robinson will have Bam. A much better game.
Okay, so you're saying Bam plays.
His not as serious as Dragic is, right?
They're both doubtful.
Okay. No matter who plays, I think Duncan Robinson, it'd be hard for Duncan Robinson to have a worse game, but I think Duncan Robinson will have a good game.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, let's do it. Let's go Duncan Robinson.
And by the way, Duncan Robinson named for his parents' favorite Spurs players.
Ah, yes, of course. Yeah. Together.
Okay. We will see you next time for the mini episode, and then we'll just check in occasionally, like midweek, around the time that the Lakers get the ring.
Yeah. When the ring ceremony is socially distanced in LA, we'll be there 20 feet apart.
That's right. All right. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.